What do you think guitar players did before Jimi Hendrix invented the electric guitar? Learn to play?
Yes. Yes. That's exactly right. I did have it in my notes. I realized if you just turn the overdrive setting all the way up and you distort the fuck out of it, it just sounds like wah, 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 wah. No shit about guitar, but I do feel like it covers up for a lot of maybe sloppy, shitty playing.
Wah, 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 wah.
Did he use the vocal voice box thing?
No, that was Frampton.
That was Frampton. Around. Oh, Jesus. That was even worse. I feel like that's cheating.
It's basically cheating.
I guess like there's like levels to cheating. Turning the distortion and the gain all the way up and having a lot of wah-wah distortion is cheating, because then you can just be a sloppy, shitty guitar player. But using the vocal thing is just like, that's like another level.
When it comes to Hendrix's lead guitar vocabulary, some players we should be sure to mention as the source of that would be your Buddy Guy, Freddie King, and Albert King style of guitarist. Curtis Mayfield's rhythm playing in The Impressions, who hired Hendrix as a touring guitarist, that would be the direct source of nearly everything Hendrix ever did as far as a rhythm guitar goes. And then there's Jeff Beck, who was and is nightmarishly great. Definitely a massive influence on Hendrix when it comes to all of the feedback and making a guitar sound like a sitar and all of the not just playing guitar stuff that people incorrectly believe Jimi Hendrix invented.
Mm. So you're saying that there's some revisionist history going on here is what you're trying to tell me.
Nobody just comes out of nowhere sounding this way. That's always a lie anytime someone says that.
Sure.
But this isn't an episode just on Jimi Hendrix. This is an episode on the Jimi Hendrix Experience, which is the collection of albums that nearly everyone is talking about when they use Hendrix's name as shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot wrong with this band. A lot wrong with this band. And Jimi Hendrix would have agreed if he was here to talk about that with us. Pretty sure we could have got him as a guest.
Yeah. I wonder if we would be doing this episode if it weren't for the fact that the band existed. I mean, we could still do it, but it would be maybe a little bit harder.
Oh, if Jimi Hendrix was never in this band.
Yeah.
Just a Jimi Hendrix Sucks episode.
Yeah, yeah. It might be a little bit trickier. We could do it.
It would make our job harder.
It would definitely be a little bit trickier. But thankfully, he didn't do that. Thankfully, he had these guys in his band with him, which not only showcased their inability to play basic instruments, but also dragged his credibility as an artist down into the mud with them.
These guys rarely sound like they're playing the same song at the same time. And I think this is one of those situations, sort of like the Grateful Dead's music, where people decide that's what they like about it. But a lot of times the guys in the band didn't like that about it. And what I'm talking about, an example of what I'm talking about, would be the weird rhythm on a song like Castles in the Sand. Pretty great example of what's wrong with this band. It's not like they made some artistic creative decision because they were geniuses and they wanted this song to sound exactly that way. This band just sucked at playing the same song together at the same time, especially because of how awkward the meter of a lot of Hendrix's lyrics are. Because he's trying to force these lyrics into a rhythm that he can spit out while playing guitar at the same time. And a lot of times it comes out in this weird, herky-jerky, non-musical way. And when you're talking about a band like the Hendrix Experience, where no one in this band is just laying down a groove and holding on to that groove, everyone's trying to shred at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't work. They always, almost every time, they end up splicing a bunch of different parts from different takes together. And then Hendrix comes in and overdubs a ton of lead guitar, backwards guitar, all kinds of crazy sounding effects. So it sounds like it's supposed to be this off the rails thing, but that's just what it sounds like with him saving it, him trying to save a wasted day in the studio.
I feel like the band is like in a constant state of masturbation contest. Oh, you're going to, oh, I'm faster than you. You want to see, oh, you think you're fast? Watch how fucking fast I am. And that's like 4 hours of your day is just them jerking off in a room to see who could do it better and faster.
It is. And if one of the funniest things about this band is Noel Redding, the bass player, his inferiority complex cracks me up. This dude was in a band with Jimi Hendrix and used to get upset that everyone acted like Jimi Hendrix was the only person in the band who mattered.
Well, dude. Okay. Well, look, dude, if the name of the band is Jimi Hendrix and that's like the first two words are his name, you got nothing to, you can't ever say that. You can't ever complain that you feel like the band just revolves around him. What the fucking band is named after him, dude. Like, what exactly? I don't really, what's your argument here? All the other members of the Dave Matthews Band get upset when it's like, well, it just feel like it's about Dave. It's called the Dave Matthews Band, dude. I don't know what to tell you. Join a different band.
When people make jokes about guitar players who weren't good enough to make it on guitar, so they end up having to switch to bass because some band who's better than anything they were going to do as a guitar player needs someone to play bass. Noel Redding is the absolute definition of that kind of guitarist. This dude barely had any time on bass as an instrument when the first album, Are You Experienced, was made. And you can tell. You can absolutely tell by listening to it. He used to have to try to learn the songs on rhythm guitar first so then he could get an idea of how to move that over to a bass guitar. And it's weird that he did it that way because the bass parts that he landed on bear no resemblance to the rhythm section of a band doing their job as the rhythm section of a band. He just couldn't get it through his head that no one ultimately cared who was doing what he did. He later got replaced and nobody cared. But he was constantly complaining and whining about it. He would throw fits and like not show up to the studio or just leave a session if he felt like no one was listening to him. This is why they eventually had to let him sing lead vocal on the song She's So Fine on Axis Bold as Love, which Noel Redding also wrote, by the way, which is why it is abysmal on every level, from concept to execution.
If you're in a band named Jimi Hendrix and you suck at your instrument, you can't really be shocked when they say we're going to go a different way.
Sit in the corner and shut the fuck up.
Yeah, seriously, you're probably just going to get rich anyways.
Like, enjoy the runoff of every category of plus.
Yes, it's all just, it's great. Like, your life is fucking fantastic. You get paid money to play bass shittily in a band. Probably shouldn't complain. But also what I was going to say was, legitimately, and I mean, I'm not like a super music nerd, but I know a decent amount. I listen a decent amount of music, whatever. I think very few people would actually know that anyone's name associated with this band. I would be shocked.
Under the age of 65, no, like, not very many people know who Mitch Mitchell or Noel Redding is.
Right.
But he was really great when Noel Redding proved everyone wrong by what he did after the Jimi Hendrix Experience when he...
Yeah, exactly. Really. I'm trying to think. Well, Matt Pinfield would probably know all the things there is to know about them, like their birthdays and, you know, every little tidbit. I think most people would just think that they were just hired guns. And they probably should have been, honestly.
A lot of people thought that at the time for certain. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Hendrix was point blank asked that. Hey, why are you playing music with these two white guys?
He would have been better off if they actually were hired guns. It would have probably been, I mean, hired guns, at least here in Nashville, would have been like probably some of the sickest players you could find on earth.
Well, and they would not have bothered you when you tried to write all of the songs for your band that had your name on it.
It's your name, your band. Yeah, you can basically do whatever the fuck you want to do and they can say absolutely nothing. It's perfect.
But it's not just Noel Redding. Mitch Mitchell is also to blame for this being not a great band. If over half the songs on Jimi Hendrix Experience album sound to you like Mitch Mitchell is saying, shit, I don't know this song. We have not learned how to play this song. I'm just going to fire off about a billion snare rolls real fast and hope it works. Hopefully nobody notices. It's because that's exactly what he's doing. He's over there just like popping off non sequitur drum fills instead of doing what a drummer does in a band. And I mean, people had not heard that before. And most of the people paying attention to this were tripping on acid. I don't know if everyone listening to this has ever done that, but a water sprinkler sounds fucking incredible when you're tripping on acid.
So much of the music that came out in this time period really doesn't hold up to any scrutiny, and Jimi Hendrix is not immune from that exact thing. It is a time and a place music, and a drug and a time place music. A whole lot of your experience with this is going to be dictated by what drugs you're on. I think it would be very difficult to find people that are like super, super stoked about Jimi Hendrix that also aren't potheads or done copious amounts of psychedelics in their life.
Yeah, and it's not like you had to smoke weed in the 1960s or 1970s to get into this. If you smoke weed now and put this on, it'll probably sound good to you.
Yeah, of course.
If like you're first getting into drugs and this is what you're listening to at the time.
But what doesn't sound
good? You're going to associate whatever you're doing with the good feeling of doing those pleasant mind-altering substances for the first time. That's provided you don't have a panic attack, in which case you probably hate Jimi Hendrix. First time you smoke weed, you get a panic attack in an apartment while Hendrix albums are playing. You're probably not going to revisit this stuff. Maybe there is an inverse correlation. Maybe it works the other way.
There are tons of bands that we have talked about that I would bet that if you asked their hardcore fans, like, do you think you would actually like this? If you could get them to be honest, which is probably not going to happen because they built their whole fucking personality off of their love for whatever band. Do you think you would like this band if you did not imbibe copious amounts of drugs? If you weren't like a pothead, you think you'd listen to Tool for real? If you didn't enjoy tripping every Friday night with your friends, you think you'd really think Jimi Hendrix was that great? Nobody's going to be honest about it. They're going to be like, yeah, I'd still love it. No, I don't think you do. You'd be listening to fucking NPR.
One of everyone's favorite Hendrix songs is The Wind Cries Mary. That's a recording everyone loves. Nobody in the band loved that recording, though. They had to release it. The recording of that song that you know got released that way because all the mistakes were in it and they knew that, but it still sounded better than all the other times they tried to play it. That was the first attempt at recording that song. They went back and tried to record it again and again and again, and they couldn't even play it any better than that first time with all the mistakes that are in it. So they had to just release it the way that it was.
Shocked.
So we have new t-shirts, but I just realized, can we say how specifically can we describe the designs of our new shirts?
We have shirts that roundaboutly might kind of make you think of a certain 90s grunge rock band and or another famous rock band from the across the pond.
It rhymes with the Bowling Bones.
The Bowling Bones.
Yeah. Shmervana.
Shmervana. Come on down to YFBSpod.com merch store. Buy a t-shirt, buy a flag, buy a pin, buy a sticker.
The difference between the records the Jimi Hendrix Experience made with all of the 1960s studio gadgets at their disposal and the racket they made live on stage is night and day. There are all kinds of recordings, audio and video, of this band on stage, and they sound nothing like the records. This was one of the most common complaints about the Jimi Hendrix Experience then and now, is how much they relied on gimmicks. And because of the way that Hendrix acted on stage, everyone always assumes that's the gimmick that is being criticized. The fact is, everything this band did in recording studios was way more gimmicky than anything that he did as part of their stage show. Because that's the only way they could keep all these songs from sounding like a band doing the same thing over and over again. Crosstown Traffic is not the one where Hendrix invented anything. It's the one where he doubles the lead guitar with a kazoo to make it sound different from the lead guitar on all of his other fast songs. Little Wing isn't the one where Hendrix invented anything. It's the one where he played through a Leslie cabinet to make his guitar sound different than the way his guitar sounds on all the other slow songs. Any track regarded as a standout track in this discography, if you look up the way it was recorded, you will find it was the one where they used some studio technique or instrument or piece of equipment that was only used on a few songs to make sure those songs stood out from the rest of the pile.
And there goes all the stories up in smoke in one foul swoop.
All the stories are about what I just said. If you look up all the stories, they are directly about how did you make that song sound different than the other ones?
Yeah.
Oh, well, Hendrix just played his guitar differently. Never. It's we spent 6 hours using scissors and glue.
People put certain artists, and Jimi Hendrix would definitely be one of them, on a very, very high pedestal and like to tell themselves these stories. It was just pure talent and there's nothing else to it. But a big reason why you cared about a lot of this stuff is all the shtick that went with it. The recording techniques and the live shows. And that's what people still talk about the most now to this day. Oh, isn't that the guy that lit his guitar on fire? Or like the way he acted on stage. That's what people remember. Not like all you guitar freaks out there. They're like, no, it was his prolific guitar playing. Well, no, maybe for you because you love guitar, that's true, but that's actually not true. for a majority of people that listen to it.
He was not what you would call a versatile player in any category. And again, if you think he was a wildly innovative rhythm guitarist, you just need to spend a lot more time listening to Curtis Mayfield as a guitar player, not as a singer and songwriter, specifically the way that he played guitar. And you can find a lot of live footage of him doing it. His rhythm stuff is straight up pre-Hendrix. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I already went through the list of lead guitar players. He just took what he liked from what everyone else was doing and put it all together in a package that scared the shit out of everyone else, because there was no way Eric Clapton and Pete Townsend in a charisma competition with Jimi Hendrix. You can make it two against one and it's never going to come out any other way.
True. Those two added together are pretty fucking boring.
Even there, though, if you want to say that's what made Hendrix great was the charisma and it was the stage show. He referred to that as him acting like a clown. He hated it. There are several contemporaries of his who said they felt Hendrix automatically lost respect for any audience who responded favorably to him doing all that shit. Playing with his teeth, acting like his guitar was a dick, humping his guitar, humping the stage. He just did that because he didn't take the people in front of him seriously. Yeah. He saw that they liked that and they didn't know the difference between him playing well or playing out of tune or playing the same song as the other people in the band. He saw that it didn't matter. So he just fucked around, humped the stage, take a paycheck, walk. Who gives a fuck? And this is why he started talking in interviews about how he didn't want to be a clown anymore. In the same interviews when he starts talking about wanting to take a break from his career in order to go study music. He wanted to get better at composition because he knew that all the shit he was doing on stage was a clown show and everything they were doing in the studio was clown shit too.
Mm-hmm. I did watch I don't know the story of the live show. It was just like a live, one of the songs live. And I could kind of see for a second why maybe he did a lot of this sticky stuff, because a majority of people don't want to watch someone just fillet their guitar they don't care. And that's kind of what he did for a lot of this stuff, was just going out there and bullshitting on his guitar for 8 straight minutes. And when I say the crowd was bored, I honest to God, if they panned to the crowd and they were all asleep, they would look so incredibly bored. So I don't know, maybe they were loving his guitar playing, but they look so fucking bored. He's got to start doing his crazy shit to make it interesting. It puts him in a little bit of a pinch of what he wants to be, I guess, as an artist.
Well, the other thing about all the guitar players that he's biting from, aside from Curtis Mayfield, it's a lot of blues players and a lot of
obvious, even to me, the untrained person.
Albert King and Freddie King were fascinating to watch live, but they were never that famous. They never had a huge career. A lot of them sat down while they played. Mm-hmm. And like, have you ever gone to a blues fest or have like accidentally found yourself at a blues fest?
No, I would love to, though.
The worst. It's
really?
Oh, it's bad.
Oh, God.
It's terrible. It's such a rigid format. There are hard rules. And if you break these rules, if you don't do the paint by numbers kit, you don't qualify for the genre anymore. Like you don't get to be at the blues festival. You got to do your version of the 5 blues songs.
Right.
And there are not very many personalities who can rivet an audience, certainly not like a huge Woodstock size audience, by sitting in a chair. Lightnin' Hopkins is one of the few people who I think his personality can just carry it through.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how good of a guitar player you are.
I do remember seeing pictures of like B.B. King and stuff like that playing, and it would just be him sitting in a seat. I always thought it was strange, but I never got into blues. So I was always like, well, maybe that's what they do. I don't know.
If you're into the music, it's great. If you're trying to hit top 40 radio,
not so
good
much.
Luck, man. Good luck. I think Hendrix only hit top 40 in the U.S. once. So even his version of the blues electric guitar, people just don't want to hear that shit.
Yeah, it's boring. I mean, it just is. I feel like a majority of people that like this stuff like it because of random reasons. I think really, oddly enough, I think movies like Wayne's World shooting him back into like the zeitgeist of a new younger generation. Oh, I should like this because it was in this movie that I liked or whatever.
I really wish that Hendrix hadn't died. I would have loved to have seen how badly he pissed off everyone who thinks that the albums he made with the Experience were even what he wanted to be doing.
And that's not even like really that crazy to say, because you could just read what he said himself.
I truly think people do not understand how much Jimi Hendrix hated a lot of your favorite music by the Experience. There was one time they were on TV, I think it was the BBC, and I think he got banned from being on the BBC ever because of this. they were on stage to play the song Hey Joe, which was his first hit and the first song that he decided he hated because it was the one that everyone wanted to hear. And he knew it was just basic as shit. And he really, really wanted to move past this almost immediately after doing it. But it's, you're a jukebox, you're a human jukebox. They put the money in, you got to play the song. But on this televised appearance, they stop playing Hey Joe. He just stops playing it, says to the audience that he thinks the song is trash and they'd rather play something else. And they start doing a cover of Sunshine of Your Love by Cream.
It tells you what they think of their own stuff.
I think he called it rubbish. We'd like to stop playing some of this rubbish for you now and play something better.
It is kind of a thing that we've talked about on so many episodes where bands actually end up hating the songs that made them popular. Actually, it's like one of the most common stories, I feel like, in rock and roll music.
Even if you like it, man, if it gets to be a big enough hit, you're going to start hating it.
Yeah.
When it's all anyone wants to hear you do, you're going to hate it because you want to keep doing new stuff. You want to go past it. You want to get better. No one thinks you're getting better like you do. Everyone thinks that you're getting pretentious or trying to reach beyond your grasp.
And also, a lot of people don't care about the things that most artists actually end up caring about. Most people don't care. They want to hear a hook, and that's really about it.
If Hendrix lived another 20 years, I don't think it would have been possible for him to play a concert without someone yelling at him to set his guitar on fire. Sure. That would have become his free bird.
Yeah.
Set your guitar on fire!
100%. It would have turned into they want him to be a clown. Like, play the clown shit. Play the easy stuff and do your funny stuff. Like, set your guitar on fire, hump the stage, whatever it is. Oh, and play Foxy Lady, please.
Play Foxy Lady.
That's all we want to hear. And you'd be like, what the fuck? You know, I wrote that in my sleep. What are you talking about? Like, I want to play something interesting. And they're like, no, don't play interesting shit. Play the hits.
Play your hit.
Play your hit.
So the standard story of how any Jimi Hendrix Experience single came to exist is that the band would lay down basic tracks. Hendrix would say they were not good enough and they needed to keep recording it over and over and over and over again. At a certain point, usually Noel Redding would be the person who got annoyed and just left the studio. So Hendrix would take over and play his parts too. He would start playing all the bass parts and they would still never put down a good take. But at least now they have all these different tapes that he can start splicing together and then start hiding mistakes by overdubbing guitar until at the end, there's this record that barely has anything to do with what the band actually played in that room. And this is why Hendrix started talking about wanting to walk away from all of this to learn more about how to compose music so that he could write a song that his band could play together. They could go into a studio, record it, maybe do some overdubs, but it's not like the thing requires overdubs in order to Dr. Frankenstein some single together out of what would otherwise be a completely wasted and ridiculously expensive overtime recording session. That's why the best thing that he ever did was the Band of Gypsies album. He took two no-bullshit musicians, maybe four effects pedals, walked out on stage, and stood still to actually play his guitar.
Mm.
At a couple points, Buddy Miles spent too much time doing call-and-response stuff with the crowd, so Hendrix just cut those parts out of the tape before releasing the album. He even still said that he wasn't happy with that finished album, but if you look into why, it's the same reasons that he wasn't happy with the experience. His guitar was still going out of tune all over the place. There were parts where the band wasn't well rehearsed enough to play well enough together, and this bothered him for the same reason the experience bothered him, is he was determined to gradually move away from all of this audio and visual pyrotechnic pandering he had done with the Jimi Hendrix Experience and cut everything down to just the music.
Is there anybody that he ever played with that he liked? Is there anybody that he was like, oh, this person's actually really good at their shit? I wonder if it wasn't that they were good at what they did, but if maybe he just had ridiculous expectations that nobody could have lived up to.
I think he was a perfectionist, which is why I think he had the potential to become something truly great. I don't think that he ever fully realized that potential because unfortunately he died before the age of 30.
What was the 28?
It's the 27 club.
The 27 club. Brutal, dude. How many people fall into that now at this point? Like something obscene.
They're still making them.
I know. It hasn't stopped.
They're still coming out with 27 club inductees.
Yes.
That's something that we don't talk about a lot on here. I just think it's weird, dark, death cult, death fetish stuff. there's not some mystical thing. There's not some mystical connection there. And it's kind of gross that rock music magazines basically
romanticize it almost.
Romanticize this thing and create it.
Which they do.
The whole Forever Young.
Oh, God.
I think that if you put Jimi Hendrix on the cover of a rock music magazine anytime in this decade, you should have to use aging technology to try to project what he would have looked like if he was still alive.
Sure.
You don't get to use the forever young, stay pretty, die young, leave a good looking corpse picture. It's just gross.
Well, yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it's better to be honest about these people's lives, not just make it all pretty and stuff like that. Oh, still remembering so-and-so 50 fucking years later. Maybe we should remember them for the whole story, not just the pretty parts. Because it does. It ends up romanticizing.
We definitely need to talk about the lyrics before we wrap this up, because the lyrics these are some of the worst lyrics of all time. Honestly, those are pretty good by the standard of Jimi Hendrix lyrics. Foxy Lady is not bad.
Foxy.
90% of this dude's lyrics sound like a teenager describing blacklight posters in a head shop.
Every Jimi Hendrix thing is exactly that.
This is like a step above Jim Morrison. When you start to realize that Jim Morrison might have been a complete fucking moron, which he was, and never had anything interesting to say, you're like, okay, what else is out there? Okay, Hendrix, that's the next level. And then after 20 years, you maybe get to a songwriter who can actually string together a sensible statement in a poetic way. But this is just scribbling in homeroom instead of paying attention to the announcements over the PA levels of first attempt at poetry. This is like, I think I could be a poet. This is like the poetry of someone who realized they were not a poet and then became an accountant.
Sure.
Who smokes weed on the weekends.
This is the downfall, I guess, of making the whole band kind of feel like you have to do everything in the band. And then there's some real obvious weak points there, and lyrics are a real fucking weak point. But you don't trust your bandmates to do anything, including playing their own instruments. So you're like, well, you guys are definitely not writing the lyrics to anything because you're knuckle dragging morons.
Yeah. Well, so I think the weakest point of the Jimi Hendrix experience, which doesn't even feel fair to go at because Hendrix knew this himself and talked about it all the time, is his singing. Not a singer, but it would feel ridiculous to spend 10 minutes talking about that because he would say the same thing. Like, sure. He didn't even really want to be a singer.
Maybe
he was like, can you bury my vocal in the mix more, please? I don't want to listen to that shit.
But here's the hard part is when you make the band about you, you have to do all of the pieces, right? Apart from playing drums and bass, whatever. But like, you are the songwriter. So you sing, even though you can't very well sing. And then you write all the lyrics, because that's what the singer does, is write the lyrics, but they suck. It ends up creating kind of like a mishmash of bullshit.
If you told Hendrix he wasn't allowed to mention water or sand in his lyrics, he would have no idea what to write a song about. Moonbeams and dragonflies with tears in their eyes, and skies have cried for the winds to blow where we'll always go when the rain comes again. Everyone's like, what Hendrix song is that? I just made that shit up.
Dude, I legitimately thought it was a Hendrix song.
I mean, I have some Hendrix lyrics here, but the problem with so much of Jimi Hendrix lyrics is he's just doing a Bob Dylan impersonation to the point where he's lucky that Dylan was a fan, because if Dylan wasn't, he could have raised all kinds of hell over the lyrics of so many Hendrix songs. Wind Cries Mary is a shameless third-rate Bob Dylan. The traffic lights, they turn blue tomorrow and shine their emptiness down on my bed. The tiny island sags downstream because the life they lived is dead. That doesn't mean anything. You can spend all day analyzing that and you will never be able to make that mean something, which is the thing about Bob Dylan lyrics. There is ultimately always some sort of logic or meaning a person can derive by studying Dylan lyrics, because he was usually trying to communicate a real idea, if not a full-fledged story, in an abstract way, sure, but you can get there if you spend enough time on it. With Hendrix, it's just phantasmagoria. It is just head shop posters. He knew 95% of the people buying head shop posters never understood what the fuck Bob Dylan was talking about anyway.
Yeah.
And then it didn't matter. Hendrix built an entire song around the cool part, which is the part where he yells the lyrics, "Where are you on this hot, cold summer?" over and over again.
Again, these kind of things, though, when you're fucked up, like you're super stoned, you're like, bro.
Yeah, man, that's cool. Hot, cold.
Yeah, think about that for a second, dude. Oh, my God, bro. Like, it's so deep if you think about it, because, like, summer's hot, dude. It only fucking makes sense because you're stoned out of your fucking mind.
I mean, Hendrix is also maybe one of, if not the most famous example of the writer who people hear a different lyric than what he's actually saying, because the human brain's job is pattern recognition. Yes. It's trying to find things and interpret them in a way that makes sense. You're always going to try to make things make sense when they don't make sense. That's what your brain's job is.
Yeah.
Hendrix may be the most famous example of people doing that on a mass scale. Purple Haze, "Excuse me while I kiss this guy." Mm-hmm. So many people think that he's talking about kissing a guy in that song, because at least that would mean something. It would be a better song lyric if it was "kiss this guy" instead of "kiss the sky." Kissing the sky doesn't mean anything at all.
It does if you're high as fuck. Or you're tripping on LSD. It actually makes total sense, because the clouds come down and you're like, oh my God, I could kiss them.
Do you know how much of a better song lyric it is? He found out that people thought he was saying "kiss this guy," that he started singing it that way on purpose in concerts. Shit, I should have done that. That would have been better. Or well, I could just start doing it now. Yeah. And then he did.
I was watching one of the things that I saw besides Jimi Hendrix live was some other artists deciding that it would be a good idea to cover Jimi Hendrix. And I have to say that that's probably a terrible fucking idea. And I don't care if you're a great guitar player, like, you probably should never cover Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, so that's one of my favorite things about Stevie Ray Vaughan. Actually, it's my only favorite thing about Stevie Ray Vaughan, is that one of his big numbers was to cover Little Wing. Bro, if your whole career is being a inferior version of Jimi Hendrix, probably don't cover one of his songs, and make sure everyone who didn't realize that is bound to realize it now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is like Jimi Hendrix, but worse.
Well, it's really fair to say that Hendrix's style was very like loosey-goosey, soulfulness, and or entertaining people depending on how he felt on the day. Sometimes it was one or the other. But for a lot of guitar players, especially goofy, cringy,
white British dudes, yeah, mostly at the time.
White British dudes that pride themselves on being tight guitar players, pride myself on playing tight. You should never, ever, ever cover a Jimi Hendrix song, because it will be emphatically worse than the original by far, no comparison.
My favorite thing about Hendrix's career, and this is easily the coolest thing that he did, was he wasn't making it happen over here in the United States. So he went over to England. And the thing that had been happening in England for a long time is all of these white dude guitar players were listening to the same blues records that Hendrix was listening to and copying. And they're so far removed from the source material, they can get on a stage to people who have no frame of reference for any where this stuff comes from or what it is, to be like, hey, check this out. And I'm talking specifically about like Eric Clapton,
yeah,
and Pete Townsend, but he eventually moved away from the blues. Probably not a coincidence, soon after Hendrix showed up on the scene. And everyone's just like, fuck me. The greatest story involving Hendrix, I assume everyone listening to this episode this deep is already aware, but he goes over, and within like a week of landing, the only thing he wants to do is get on stage and sit in with Cream, because everyone thought that Eric Clapton and his work in Cream specifically was the be all end all of electric blues guitar. Hendrix gets up on stage, kicks into Killing Floor, and just mops the floor with Eric Clapton. And again, yeah, so like whenever anyone hypes Hendrix up by saying that he was the best at the time or whatever, not hard, not a difficult thing.
I was gonna say the bar was really fucking low.
Such a low bar when you're talking about Eric fucking Clapton,
Jesus,
the least soulful guitar player of all time versus Jimi Hendrix. It's just not even close. But so then apparently Clapton just had a meltdown after the show.
Sure.
Started screaming at the dude who asked if Hendrix could sit in. "You never told me he was that good, man." Just like fast forward to the year 2022, and Eric Clapton is still being a fucking white nationalist, whatever the fuck. And his racist tendencies may have a lot to do with the fact that he had his entire identity
picked up by the carpet and shaken loose on stage in front of his fans.
Maybe Hendrix's greatest piece, the thing that he added the best to music, isn't his sloppy guitar playing or ununique style. It is the fact that he probably made a lot of people quit
yes.
playing guitar. That's
a legacy you can be proud of.
That is a real, you got to know that Jimi Hendrix made a lot of even more mediocre guitar players really, really bummed out when he came along. Like, my God, like, he must have been watching him going, oh my God, how am I ever going to show my face again?
I mean, it's like if you're a con artist and the best con artist of all time rolls up onto your scene, like the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where you're like, yeah. Well, fuck, my entire thing is screwed because of this asshole. That's great.
Yeah, that will go down as Hendrix's greatest gift to music. Causing a whole lot of fucking shitty white dudes to quit playing guitar.
But as far as the music goes, if Jimi Hendrix Experience is your favorite band,
your favorite band sucks.
You're welcome for listening to another psychedelic episode of Your Favorite Band Sucks. If you want to find the dumbest motherfucker on YouTube, go check out the comments on this episode and look for the asshole who thinks we really believe Jimi Hendrix invented the electric guitar. No, it's not a drinking game, but when you do spot that comment, you are legally obligated to post this episode on all your social media. It can be a link or just a screenshot of you listening in your podcast app or on YouTube. We don't care, but those are the rules. All right, we've had a lot of fun recently teasing bands and then dropping an episode on a different band, but it's time to get back to being honest because, well, as you're aware, it's no joke that we are in a dark time for music. And the next artist this podcast is covering has a lot to do with that. Yes, of course, and obviously, I am talking about Bon Iver.